his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Tipped away and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Scored! Jones. Watford for the win. Yes! Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of Podcast on the Brink. Greg Rosenstein here, joined by Matt Dollinger. It's kind of a slow news week for Indiana, but we still got a big show for you today. We have Jeremy Gray, Assistant Athletic Director for IU. He's also the play-by-play guy for the IU women's basketball team. He'll join us in a few minutes to kind of talk about what he's seen out of this year's squad. And we also have Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall. He's going to do a little recruiting roundup to kind of go over that. There's some news on that end. But Matt, how's everything going with you?
It's going well. Like you said, a slow news week right now. Kind of the soft spot of IU's schedule. Up until before the Butler game, they really haven't played anyone since North Carolina. In fact, Greg, I'll give you $1 million if you can tell me who they play on Saturday. I hear you clicking right now. I know you're looking.
4-3 Central Connecticut State.
All right, that is correct. Yeah. Well, you know, it's not really worth talking about them too much. I did look into them a little bit, and they haven't lost by more than 3 points this season. Took two games to overtime, so maybe we shouldn't completely bypass them. So this counts as an analysis, I think, right?
Yeah, that's about as much as we probably need to go into it.
Yeah, but also, Greg, you know, nice lead-in to start the show, but you've got some news yourself, don't you?
Yeah, I got a new job. I think I'll still be able to do the podcast. Basically, I'm moving to Bristol in about a month to be an editor for ESPN Insider. So that's semi-exciting, moving away from D.C. I don't know what Connecticut's like. Maybe I'll go to a Central Connecticut State game at some point.
They're big there. Yeah, you should not badmouth them before moving up to Bristol.
That's a good point. I mean, the Blue Devils are, I'm looking at their logo, I don't even know what they are, might be a decent game to go to once I move up there. And so kind of exciting. Hopefully scheduling will work out so we could keep doing the podcast, but I think it will.
Don't let the worldwide leader get in the way of this show. You got to have your priorities straight.
My contract that I have to be able to do the podcast every week,
right?
Or else I'm taking it.
That's right. That's correct. Well, hey, yeah. Well, let's go ahead and get Jeremy Gray on the program today. We're eager to talk to him. We want to talk to him about some of the biggest storylines from this year, get his take on maybe where this IU team stands versus teams in recent history, and just talk to him about his impressions from the year. And then we'll wrap up the show later with Bozich, Greg, just as you said, to get his take on recruiting and the latest there. So let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be with Jeremy. All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. We are now joined by the IU Athletic Department's jack of all trades, Jeremy Gray. He's the Assistant Athletic Director, the voice of the women's basketball team. He hosts a post-game show for the football team, and he also happens to know a lot about the men's basketball team. Jeremy, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Indiana's number one. Purdue's not all that good. Kentucky's out of the top 25. Hanukkah is tomorrow. Everything's going well.
Man, it's good to be a Hoosier these days, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is. It's, you know, we even had an 80-degree day in Bloomington in December. So, I mean, it couldn't be better.
Wow. Happy Hanukkah to both of you guys. It's a big day for us coming up.
Definitely. You got it.
Well, let's put global warming aside and try and forget about that for a second and talk a little bit about the Hoosiers. Jeremy, you know, you've got great insight into IU's team. You're around the team often, and just kind of wanted to start off by getting your impressions, you know, on the start so far, and maybe what's kind of stood out and surprised you.
Well, it's been an impressive start, to be sure. I mean, you look at their efficiency rankings, both offensively and defensively, and they're at the top or near the top in the country in virtually every relevant category. They've taken on some bad teams and they've blown them out. They've taken on some quality teams and won by double digits. At this point, what's not to like? And it appears as they're at the quarter turn of the season, that they haven't let the number one ranking go to their head. And what's maybe more impressive is you've got a lot of people who are maybe eyeing a professional future. There have been some games where it would have been okay if they were selfish, and Indiana still would have been fine and won. Yet they haven't. They haven't indulged that temptation. They remain a very unselfish basketball team. They move the ball around. They don't care who is the leading scorer night after night. And I think that is the makings of a team that's going to make a legitimate run at a championship this year.
Now, Matt and I have complained, I guess that might be the right word, about how we were at IU for the worst years in history. At the same time, fans still came out for the games, which just shows kind of the level of passion this program has. With that said, do you feel any kind of difference in the just general vibe in Bloomington, you know, maybe this year compared to what it was 2-3 years ago?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Indiana basketball has taken over. People are happy. I mean, it changes the overall mood and feel of the town. And I know it's silly that a basketball program or a sports team of any kind can have that kind of effect. But it's amazing to see. You know, I drop off my kid at daycare, and people are asking about our small forwards. You know,
right.
Daycare providers. I mean, it's that type of an atmosphere. And I actually think this is the best team that Indiana's had since 1993. But I can't recall a team that is as beloved as this one for all the reasons that you mentioned, the struggles of the last decade, and that they're the team that brought Indiana back. But I think it's even more than that and the success they've had on the court. You watch Victor Oladipo play, and he's got that Willie Mays quality where it looks like he's having a great time while he's doing it. You know, Cody Zeller's the team's best player, and he's diving on the floor for loose balls. Jordan Holes is kind of the archetype of what an Indiana basketball player should be.
Yeah.
And Will Sheehy, who's known as the guy that other teams are all going to dislike, you know, even that is very appealing to Indiana fans because he kind of has this we're not going to take it anymore attitude. And, you know, when our tough guy is probably going to be going to law school after he's done playing basketball, you know that your program's in a good shape and very relatable and likable.
Yeah. Sorry, Matt, just real fast, staying with this topic on, like, fans in particular, you know, I can't remember where I read it or heard it, but somebody, like, some national media was saying that they just notice the fans are turning out, but it's also maybe a lot more swag, a lot more confidence with the group of fans, especially students. I mean, do you see that too? Is there a difference in just straight up confidence level you see?
Yeah, last year, you know, somebody, it was actually my dad, we were having a conversation about the crowds for the Kentucky game and the crowd for the North Carolina game and what the difference was. It was only one decibel point different. Kentucky had pegged out a 115. For North Carolina, it was 114. But Kentucky, there was an edge to the crowd that we really wanted it to make a statement that we're back on the map and that we deserve to be in a big game. For North Carolina, it was just as loud, but it was more of a celebration from start to finish. Like, yeah, you're coming into our house. You're going to walk away with the loss. Indiana basketball is truly elite again. I do think that there is a different level of confidence of IU fans everywhere. And to the point where it's made college basketball on the whole very exciting for Indiana fans because you're watching Florida play to see how Indiana is going to match up. You're paying attention to four or five other teams that you believe is even in the same sphere as Indiana that could possibly, you know, contend with them in March and early April.
You know, I think a lot of it is really exciting just for the students in particular because, you know, while I was a student at IU, the Hoosiers struggled for the most part. And, you know, I think the students at times didn't know how to react because they came to IU being told, oh, yeah, this basketball program has this storied tradition. Look at the banners. We've always been good. And then, you know, they would struggle so much. They'd be like, really? They used to be good? But, you know, now they're seeing the success. And, you know, I think you're going to start seeing, you know, more and more kids go into Indiana again just because of the basketball team, just for those season tickets. And, you know, that's, I think, happened a lot, you know, during the glory days and everything. But it really seems like that everyone's just gravitating towards the team and the popularity just is at an all-time high.
Yeah, I agree. I think it helps out the university. I mean, one of the things that would be appealing to go to, you know, a major conference school that's got a notable either football or basketball tradition is to be a part of that. And that was something, you know, over certain chunks of the last decade that Indiana students missed out on. It's really gratifying to see Indiana back for all different generations. For people of my age, it's great to see them back the way that it was when I was growing up as a little kid. If you're a person who's followed Indiana basketball since the McCracken years, you can take comfort knowing that you're probably going to pass from this earth and Indiana's going to be the great basketball program that you experienced for the bulk of your life. And if you're a student, it's just pandemonium. I mean, you're arriving on campus and the team's number one in the country. And the benefits are all over the place, and it's great to see the different generations react to it. And, one of the nice things about it is you see this team honor the 53 team and how the 53 team reacted to the guys who are on this team. But even the diehard Bob Knight supporters look at this team and can envision Cody Zeller and Victor Oladipo and Remy Abel having a role on Bob Knight's teams. It just feels like the old Indiana again.
Well, you touched on something there, which I've definitely taken notice of lately. Like you, I'm a lifelong Hoosier, and it's been really nice to, turn on the television and see Bob Knight talking about Indiana once again and kind of acknowledging their existence. And, I think a lot of IU fans really enjoyed hearing him call the game and talking about Jordan Hulls in particular. He had some really nice things to say. While Indiana is back to being an elite team, back to being number one, for me personally, and I wonder how you feel about this, I'm never going to really feel completely whole again until there's some kind of resolution with Bob Knight. I don't know if that means he comes back or not, or maybe if it just means he acts like he doesn't hate Indiana anymore, which it seems like he's doing now on television. It seems like, maybe things are starting to soften. Those hard feelings are starting to go away. What about you? I mean, what do you think about Coach Knight on television and, his recent association with IU again?
Well, I mean, I grew up loving Coach Knight and his teams, and I get chills when the pregame intro is played and Bob Knight's visage is up there and the crowd continues to go wild, and to hear him rapsing poetically about Jordan Hulls as he's knocking down three-point shots against Georgia, of course it heartens me. But I think even to a greater degree, seeing all of his former players come back. Hoosier hysteria takes place, and Pat Graham is, walking through the halls of Assembly Hall again. And Matt Nover is a judge in the dunk contest, and A.J. Guyton is in the front row. A.J. Moye comes back. It's great to see the IU basketball family really coming together again. And I think a great deal of credit goes to Tom Crean. From the moment he was named the head coach at Indiana, he has reached out to the many generations of great Indiana basketball players and tried to incorporate them in the program. And I think it's one of the reasons that the program has come back. I do think it's kind of interesting. I remember conversations I had 5-6 years ago with some friends who might be associated with other schools saying, I don't know if Indiana's ever going to come back. Does a 16-year-old still care about the IU basketball tradition? Right. I think they're a lot like Alabama football. Stuck in the past, and to see Alabama football and Indiana basketball where they are, it's kind of funny.
Do you think honestly that Bob Knight will ever come back, go to Assembly Hall?
I don't know. To be honest, that's well above my pay grade, guys.
Or do you think that actually still matters to people? I know he took a step, but do you think that actually matters for him to take that final step and come back to campus?
Well, Indiana basketball is great again, number one in the country. So maybe not on the court, but of course everyone would be happy to see him back in Bloomington, no question about it.
Well, moving on, Jeremy, another thing I wanted to ask you about, the next big game for IU that everyone has circled is the December 15th game against Butler. Butler also had a big win over UNC earlier this year. They've had more success than any Indiana college basketball team the last few years. And I was kind of wondering where you think Butler stands in IU's in-state rivals these days. Fans probably get more psyched up for the Purdue game still more than anyone, but should the Hoosiers kind of view the Bulldogs as maybe their number one in-state rival right now?
I think it's a big game. I think last year that was a big step for the program as well because of Butler's recent success. For Indiana to beat them so handily at home in a game where Butler was locked in and playing hard. I think Indiana won that game by 18 points. Butler's been a remarkable story over the last 15 years, and I don't know if it's necessarily a rival because of the infrequency in which the two teams play. Mm-hmm. And other than the Cody Zeller recruitment, they're typically not going after the same players in the same way that, you know, maybe a Kentucky and Illinois or a Purdue falls into. But no doubt about it, it's a big game. They're a team that has this knack over the course of the run of making people play their way.
Yeah.
And making other teams uncomfortable on the court. They can slow games down, frustrate opponents, and then they have the propensity of hitting big shots at big moments to eke out victories against more talented teams. So I think that's going to be a huge challenge. It's a game in Indianapolis where you're going to have nice contingencies from both schools there. It's going to have a feel of a Sweet 16 game or a round of 32 game in the NCAA tournament. I think it's going to be a great test for Indiana. And it's been interesting, too, as there's been this talk about whether Duke or Indiana should be number one. And Duke, no question about it, has taken on tough opponents, and they have done their job knocking them off. But on some level, they need to reassess the quality of those wins. Indiana's win against Georgetown is actually a better win than what Duke was able to accomplish against Kentucky. And the Kentucky victory for Duke is similar to Indiana's North Carolina victory, but should be noted that if Tom Crean wanted to, Indiana could have beaten Carolina by 40.
Right.
So I think we need to reassess some of this stuff, and that Butler that appeared to be, I wouldn't say an easy game on the schedule for Indiana heading into the year, especially with Krishan Hopkins not being on the roster. Mm-hmm. That is turning into a team that is, you know, top 20 in the country in RPI and would be a huge quality victory for Indiana going forward. So, I think the schedule might be a little tougher than a lot of people are giving it credit for.
Yeah, it's a great point.
I'm trying to think what game maybe I'm most looking forward to. You know, Butler is an interesting game, but like Jeremy said, they don't play each other that often, so it's hard to consider them necessarily a rival outside of the proximity. And Purdue is just bad. It's like I honestly feel a little bit sorry for them. They have like four losses already. I'm still kind of upset Kentucky's not on the schedule because in my mind, and maybe this because I'm not from Indiana, I even felt Kentucky was a bigger deal to me than Purdue was. I just dislike them more than I dislike Purdue, probably. But I mean, I guess, Jeremy, kind of looking forward, is there any opponent you're looking forward to seeing Indiana go against later this season?
I think Indiana, Michigan, those two matchups are going to be outstanding. Mm-hmm. Michigan's got a phenomenal starting five. They've got great balance in the same way that Indiana does. I think Indiana's a deeper team. But Chrysler can be a tough place to play. And the home game, Indiana is going to be an ESPN game day type game, and I think those are going to be hyped matchups. I think Michigan is a legitimate national title contender, as is Indiana, and I think those are going to be heavyweight matchups. And thinking about the Indiana-Michigan series over the years, it's going to have a late 80s, early 90s feel to it, where two talented teams are going to be going at it.
Jeremy, another thing you talked about earlier that I wanted to come back to is, you know, IU's slew of prospects who might make it to the NBA one day. Cody's the obvious one. We're all but sure he's going to be there. Not sure when, but, you know, I think IU's success this year has, you know, gotten a lot of other players on the radar. Victor Oladipo, Christian Watford flirted with the draft last year. And then the other guy who's really been talked about a lot lately is Jordy Hulls. And I think he's a guy that most people never really thought about the NBA. They just kind of thought, you know, what a great college player he is, and maybe their imaginations didn't dream that far. But it's tough to ignore what he's doing this year, and you know, his ability as a shooter is really a talent that could translate to the NBA. I think he's obviously got some size issues, but there are definite skills there. Well, what do you think about his chances at the next level? Do you think there's a future for him in the NBA?
Well, I said this on Twitter last week, that if the vote was held today, you would have to put Jordan Hulls on one of the three All-American teams. And I knew that he was going to be a nice piece for this basketball team and had a very solid to strong career at Indiana, but he has jumped a whole other level. And you mentioned his shooting ability. He's got 30-foot range and an extraordinarily quick release,
yeah.
And he's better than I think a lot of people give him credit for it, creating his own shot. He is not just a stand back there, wait for it, and then knock down the shot type of guy. He can create his own shot. He can knock it down off the dribble. If someone overplays him, he can get that step, you know, behind them and knock down those floaters or shots on the run. I mean, it's intriguing going forward, and, you know, you think about the career of Steve Kerr. I remember watching him at Arizona, and I didn't think, you know, 15-year NBA player, but we'll see. Jordan Knowles is starting to turn some heads, and the guy I would add to that pile, and on Twitter I've talked about him maybe being my favorite player on the team, is Will Sheehy, with his length and athleticism, yeah, and now his expanded range on the court. He's the type of guy who I could see sticking around the league for quite some time as a defensive stopper off the bench who can knock down some shots. So I think they've got more pro prospects than people give them credit for, and clearly more are on the way.
Yeah, the other comparison that Hulls brings to mind is Travis Diener, another guy who played under Crean. I think Diener might have maybe 2 inches on him in terms of height and everything, but their games are pretty similar, and Diener, I don't think he's in the NBA anymore, but he played for the Pacers and the Blazers for a couple of years and was pretty serviceable when he was in the league. Greg, you were about to say something. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I just feel bad for Jordan in a way, because as somebody who's also vertically challenged, you know, if he was like 2 or 3 inches taller, I think he'd be like a guaranteed first-round pick. But because he's only 6 feet tall or whatever, he's just not going to get the looks as much. But he's a dead-on shooter, so I guess every team needs that. I guess my last question for Jeremy is on Yogi. I was seeing today John Gassaway of ESPN. He ranked his top 25 freshmen. He has Yogi 18th. And I saw Yogi wasn't getting that much preseason buzz either when it came to Big Ten rankings in terms of freshmen. I guess what's your take on Yogi overall? I mean, he's the point guard of the number one team in the country, so I just feel like maybe he deserves a little bit more respect, or do you think that's kind of where he should be at right now?
You look at Yogi Ferrell and what he provides to this team. A game like VCU last year in the tournament doesn't play out that way, where Christian Watford has to hit huge shots at the end of the half for Indiana to at least keep their nostrils above water and have a chance in the second, and then a last, you know, possession jump shot by Will Sheehy to win it. With a guy like Yogi Ferrell, he handles that pressure and Indiana wins by 10. And I don't think you can put enough value on that. Before, you could maybe press Indiana and cause some problems. Those days are over with Yogi Ferrell in the lineup. And on some level, he's going to be hurt statistically because of how good his team is. There's so many scores that, yeah, he might end the year averaging 6 points a game. But he's going to break every press. He's going to dish off a ton of assists. And I had no idea that he was that good defensively. And I figured because of his size that it actually might be a liability. And I could not have been more wrong.
Yeah, I use talent almost puts its players at a disservice statistically just because they don't have to do everything. Cody Zeller is the consensus preseason player of the year, but, you know, I said in the past, he might not put up the statistics to be player of the year just because IU's that good. It has nothing to do with him, and Yogi's the same way. I've really been impressed with Yogi as a defender, just like Jeremy said, and also his ability as a ball handler just to, you know, dribble out of tight spaces or, you know, reset the offense when maybe, you know, a bad pass might have been made in the last couple of years. It's really been impressive. I know he struggled with his shot a little bit, so, you know, his box score numbers aren't standing out. But when you watch the Hoosiers, I definitely think that he's one of the most important freshmen in the country, although his statistics are pretty underwhelming. What about you, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I agree. I think, you know, for 18th top freshman, I know there's other guys doing well. And I mean, I guess if you're a top 25 freshman, that's still a big deal. But he's just so vital to this team. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't dislike Verdell Jones, but I just think Yogi brings so much more to the table. He's the same way in terms of height and everything. But I think, you know, another year or two, he could be pro bound at some point. And I'm interested to see how Cody might translate to the translate to the NBA. I was reading a story, I don't know if you saw this, CBS's Jeff Goodman polled like 35 NBA guys, and a lot of them want to just trade the first pick because they don't think anyone's like a surefire star. I don't know. I mean, I think Cody will be very good, but do you think he would be like an automatic impact player? I'm also saying this because my Wizards are probably going to get the number one.
Sorry, are you asking me
what I think about Cody's pro prospects? That's basically what I'm saying. How do you think he'll translate to the next level?
Well, you know, his older brother's actually playing better than people expect, and
yeah.
I think a lot of people look at Cody as a collegiate player and believe that he even has more upside than his older brother. So I think he's going to be a very good pro. I see him playing in the NBA for 12 years, a guy who will help teams win. Do I see him maybe going out there and, you know, dropping 28 a night? Maybe not, but it's rare that the first of all, there's a paucity of good big men in the NBA right now.
Mm.
I think he'll at least be that. And I think his shot is going to develop over time as he works more and more on it. His ability to run the floor, his toughness, his leadership attributes, I think it's going to make him a very good pro. And if Roy Hibbert can make All-Star games as an Indiana Pacer after the college career he had at Georgetown, I think Cody Zeller can make some All-Star games too.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, look at that UNC game film. That tells you everything about what Cody can do in the NBA, his ability to run
the
floor.
He got up for that one, didn't he?
Woof! He was quick. Yeah. I didn't know. We knew he was fast, but I don't think we knew he was that fast.
And, you know, the NBA, and I'm an NBA fan. It had a rough go from about 1995 through 2005 when it came to style of play.
Mm-hmm.
It was a grinded out, Pat Riley's Knicks, kind of the evolution of the Detroit Pistons bad boys, a lot of games that were 82-78,
yeah.
Tough to watch. But it's become a transition game again, and the best transition basketball player in America is big number 40 for Indiana. So if that's the way the NBA is going, I think Cody's going to find a nice career for himself at the next level.
And
speaking of NBA, Matt, have you changed your power rankings to not make the Wizards the last team in the league? They just beat the Heat.
Hey, they beat the Heat!
Listen, they can beat the Heat three more times. They'll probably still be in dead last. I'm sorry. There's just no hope for them until John Wall comes back. I hate to break it to you.
Whatever.
But no, Jeremy, as you said earlier, you know, I was at the Hawks-Cavaliers game the other night, and Tyler really impressed me, actually. He, you know, he runs the floor a little bit like Cody, and he had a couple of nice jumpers, and he, you know, even put the ball on the floor and took it to the rim and made me realize, you know, there is a place for the Zellers in the NBA, and the oldest Zeller, Luke, is playing for the Suns right now, so three brothers in the NBA at the same time. I'm not sure that's ever happened before.
No, and Cody is going to continue to improve. He's answered some of the questions when he first came in. Is he strong enough to absorb contact? It's clear that he is. He's got very good footwork, and I think his range is going to extend. He is not a player on this team because of the weapons they have that Indiana's asking to score 25 a night and knock down the 17-foot jump shot. So on some level, because of the weapons around him and what kind of team player he is, he might not be putting all of his skills on display, but make no mistake about it, whoever ends up drafting Cody Zeller will be happy for it.
Future Washington Wizard Cody Zeller. Go ahead and
there you go.
Picture him paired with John Wall? Kentucky and Indiana back together?
That would be interesting. You'd probably have to get the John Wall jersey. I don't think you could fit into the Cody one.
I still buy the kid sizes, so
okay.
It won't be a problem.
Good frog. Well, hey, Jeremy, thanks a lot for coming on the show. We really enjoyed talking to you about everything, and we love following your coverage of IU Athletics. We appreciate everything you do.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by that Alex Bozich guy from Inside the Hall. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. We are now joined once again by Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall, who's here to give us the latest recruiting news for the Hoosiers. Alex, what's going on, man?
Not much, gentlemen. Just getting ready for this big game Saturday against Central Connecticut State.
I offered Greg $1 million earlier if he could tell me who the IU was playing on Saturday. Needless to say, I still have every penny that I don't actually have.
Yeah, well, I got it right. You owe me money.
Yeah, you had to Google it, though, and we already went over this. That does not count.
Whatever.
Alex, anyways, you know, it's a slow news week for the Hoosiers, which is why we kind of wanted to talk a little bit about recruiting with you. You know, it's definitely active on the recruiting trail this time of the year. Could you just give us a little update maybe on what's kind of going on with IU's recruiting process right now and kind of the main storylines?
Yeah, I mean, the week off has kind of given the staff an opportunity to kind of hit the East Coast hard, as I wrote the other day in the notebook on the site. And Monday they were actually pretty close to where Greg is, I think, in Fairfax, Virginia, watching Gonzaga prep and Paul the Sixth Catholic, I believe. And there they saw two 2015 kids that both have offers. One's Bryant Crawford, who is a point guard, has visited twice, and the other one is Marcus Derrickson, a former teammate of Stanford Robinson before he transferred out to Findlay Prep. So that's kind of where they were Monday. Tuesday they went to see Theo Pinson in North Carolina, who's one of the top 10 players in the 2014 class. He's got offers from Duke, North Carolina, plenty of high major schools, and they've also had him on an unofficial visit over the summer, so they're in pretty good position there. Yesterday they were up in New Jersey, I believe it was, seeing a 2015 kid, Malachi Richardson, who they offered a scholarship to, and a 2016 point guard, I believe his name is Asante Gist. So then after that they went to Brewster Academy to see Noah Vonleh take on Brewster Academy, which Brewster Academy is now the home of Ron Patterson. So Noah Vonleh had another big rebounding game, 15 rebounds. New Hampton Prep won that game, snapped Brewster Academy's 46-game home winning streak. So a big win for them. And obviously it's kind of hard to keep track of kind of where they've been this week, because they have, like I said, been very active. So I think it kind of tells you what they think of a couple of those kids, that they're taking time out from during the season to make these trips to the East Coast, that all of those names are pretty big priorities at this point.
So that's all the information you have. I thought you were in the inn. That's only like 10 different notes to go over right now. Gosh, Alex.
I got more.
You got more? Okay. The record stuff you want to go over after. That's fine. I'm curious about Theo Pinson. I know he's I think consensus top 20 guy in 2014 class. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, 2014 class. And when I talked to him at the Nike Global this summer, he like lit up. I mean, I distinctly remember him. You know, people asked about Duke, North Carolina. Someone said Indiana, and he like smiled and he said something like it was different from all the other places he's visited. I know you know, there hasn't been much news on him with Indiana that much until this past week or so. But what's your take on Pinson overall? And do you think they have a legitimate shot of getting him at some point?
I look at that one. Duke and North Carolina are obviously right kind of there on top of him. Those are the two schools, the main schools in his area. North Carolina State's also making a tough push. But like you said, he did make that unofficial visit to Indiana, and it appears that the interest from his side of things is still pretty strong. I don't think he's anywhere near a decision at this point. So if they could get him on campus for an official visit, I think that would definitely go a long way in kind of pushing that one along. But I'd say that the three ACC schools I mentioned in Indiana are definitely right there firmly in the mix with him. But I don't think that he's anywhere near kind of narrowing things down or looking at a decision. But he is eligible to start taking official visits in January with the new NCAA rule change, where juniors can start seeing campuses and starting in January of the junior year. So that'll be something to kind of look for, to see if he starts taking his visits now or if he waits until the fall.
Alex, we had Jeremy Gray on earlier, and we're talking a lot about all of IU's NBA prospects on the team, and obviously that's a top of the coaching staff's mind on who's going to be there next year and in 2014 and everything. I was wondering, you know, judging by who IU is looking at in the 2014 and 15 classes, do you see them, you know, kind of specifically game planning for certain players to be gone and trying to replace them, or do you think they're kind of just recruiting, you know, the best talent out there right now and trying to figure out positions and everything later?
I think it's a mix of both. I mean, with a kid like Noah Vonleh, you got to kind of look at the reality here that this is a top five, top 10 kid who some of the 2014 mock drafts that are already out have him in the top five after 1 year of college. So you got to look at that and say, you know, this kid is definitely an NBA talent and kind of planned for the fact that he could be there for 1 year, or he could be 1 year, could be there for 2 years. But I think the recruiting has changed a little bit since Kenny Johnson joined the staff. I think it seems like they're targeting a lot more of the elite level kids that maybe they weren't getting in on before. And I'm not sure that that has to do specifically with Kenny Johnson, but it just kind of speaks to the position that the program's in now that they're number one. The Indiana name is resonating a little bit better nationally with a lot of these kids, so it's opening doors. I know last week they were Tim Buckley was out in California looking at a 2014 point guard, Jordan McLaughlin, who has a lot of the top West Coast schools on him, but now Indiana's firmly in the mix with him too. So it's definitely kind of a mix of both. I think you've got to kind of plan out your roster, but as we've seen, I mean, they've got on paper now 16 guys for next year. So I think they're trying to load up on the best players that they can and kind of figure out the numbers and the who fits in where later.
No, the 2014 class, there's a lot of options they could go in. I mean, I know I just saw Cliff Alexander from Chicago. He's now, at one point he said Kentucky was his favorite, but now I think he's backing off that a little bit. I know they're still in on like Ahmed Hill and Jaquan Lyle, Phil Booth. I mean, is there anyone in particular that you think would maybe fit Indiana best that they should maybe push hardest for? Or, I mean, do any of those basically work at this point?
I mean, those are all top 50 names, so it's kind of hard to say, you know, one would be better than the other. I mean, I think one guy that I'll be interested to kind of see how it plays out with is Trayvon Blewett, because they've been recruiting him for so long, and they've put a lot of time in on him. And he's, you know, been on campus so many times, and he's like the other guys, he can start taking official visits soon. And there's been a lot of buzz that Butler and Michigan were kind of the two schools out in front, but I've heard recently that his family's really interested in Indiana as kind of the option for him. So I'll be interested to see kind of where he fits. He's an Indiana kid, so obviously he's going to get a little bit more interest from some of the fans that kind of want to see the best players in the state stay home at Indiana. Another kid, Phil Booth, that you mentioned, exchanged text messages with his dad a little bit yesterday, and he's hoping to get to Bloomington either in January or February to see a game. Ahmed Hill is another one that they've offered. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, it's pretty much they're in good with several of these guys. It's just kind of a wait and see thing to see when guys narrow down their list and start taking official visits to kind of see who the most serious names are at this point.
You know, it's funny because for, you know, the past couple of years while Kareem's been at IU, the Hoosiers have been in the mix for a lot of big recruits. And, you know, you turn on ESPN or CBS, you watch a random college basketball game, you're bound to hear a name that, you know, IU was once recruiting or associated with but lost out on. But, you know,
you mean Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, there's one of them, yeah. Josh Smith from the Hawks is the guy that always comes up for me. But, you know, ever since they got Cody and they got Noah and you know, Troy Williams and everything, it's kind of given, you know, IU fans and people who are follow recruiting the reality that IU can get these recruits actually and not just be in the mix. And is that kind of the feel that you get, Alex, too, now? It's that not only are recruits, you know, interested in Indiana, but, you know, they're a lot of times the favorite for the who's going to win the battle.
I mean, just looking at kind of how things have evolved over the past year, I mean, I can remember a little, 2.5 years ago, there was kind of a Moses Abraham watch to kind of see where this kid was going to go. Yeah. We were staying up till midnight to kind of see where his handler would announce that he was going. And there was other guys. Cody Larson was another kid that really never panned out, that a lot of fans were interested in his recruitment. I remember when Crean first got there was a kid by the name of Maurice Sutton that ended up at Villanova and never really turned out to be much of a player. I mean, these were the kind of the guys that people were getting excited about towards the beginning of the tenure. Now you're in a situation where you got a guy like Noah Vonleh, who they really started putting the full court press on in the spring and the summer. And then by the time he takes his first official visit, they get him to commit. So that kind of, you know, it shows you that really, you know, the elite level recruits are taking Indiana seriously now. And as much as people say they want to get the best players from Indiana, I think that kind of the best strategy going forward is a mix of the best players from Indiana, and then you go out and you kind of supplement that with the best kids maybe from the East Coast and wherever else is a strong recruiting base. I mean, the DMV is the It's going to be, I think, even stronger base now that Maryland's joining the Big Ten.
DMV is always strong, no matter what.
Well, yeah.
Well, Alex, will you be making the trip up to Bloomington this Saturday for the big Central Connecticut State game, or will you be waiting for the Butler game up in Indianapolis?
No, I'll be there Saturday. I haven't really done my homework much on Central Connecticut State yet, but I do know that out of the four remaining home games, non-conference home games, they're actually the strongest opponent. So, not sure what that says about the strength of the non-conference. I was kind of looking ahead a little bit on the schedule. It was interesting that CBS kind of did a piece where they looked at the unbeaten teams remaining in the country and kind of broke them down as, you know, into contenders or the jury's still out and the teams that really hadn't really proven much. And they also, as part of that, predicted when each team would lose their first game. And they didn't have Indiana losing until all the way February 10th at Ohio State. So
wow.
Looking at the schedule, it sets up pretty favorably early in the Big Ten schedule. I mean, the first two games are at Iowa and at Penn State. So I think that'd be a big confidence boost going to get those two games and winning those two games out of the gate, given the struggles that they've had in the past in the Big Ten road play.
Yeah, it's definitely a favorable schedule for the Hoosiers coming up. I think we all can't wait for the Big Ten season, though, ready for you know, a couple big games a week rather than, you know, right now this December, one game a week, waiting for a respectable game that's 9 days away. I think we're ready for Big Ten season. What about you, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, speak for yourself, though. I'm pretty pumped about this Central Connecticut State game.
Oh, man, you've come
a- You never know how a team will play.
You've come a long way in the last 40 minutes.
Good point.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink. Alex, thanks again for joining us. We appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime, guys.
And we'll be back next week to preview the Butler game, so be sure to check back with Inside the Hall for that. Until then, for Greg Rosenstein, I'm Matt Dollinger. Thanks for listening, and have a good one.